during this conference on stability, sorry, heating engine drive, as well as innovative concepts.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's indeed an honor and a privilege to be giving this summary talk, and I would like to thank the program committee for giving me this opportunity. It's also a big challenge because as you can see, there's something like 135 papers. It's not possible to list all of them or tell you the contributions from each one of them. So this is not going to be an exhaustive review. It's going to be a selective review. So what I'm going to do is to talk about some of the highlights in these subtopics that I have chosen in the area of magnetic confinement experiments. And I'm going to illustrate this with a few examples from the papers that have been presented at this conference. In my written report, I hope to give you a more complete report, so don't feel bad if you don't see your name here. So the basic subtopics for EXS and EXW, which is mainly guided by ITER priority needs, are disruptions and runaways, ELMS, and 3D physics, waves and energetic particles, MHD instabilities, and current drive, and RF heating. So disruptions and runaways, you know, is a major concern for ITER operation. And the main issues are broadly uncertainties associated with disruption loads that can impact the structural integrity of the machine. The other question is how to limit the number of disruptions to protect the machine life, for which one needs to develop disruption avoidance and control methods. And also, one should be able to predict disruptions with some reliable accuracy. There's also a need for a reliable disruption mitigation system once the disruption does occur. So this consists of mitigating both thermal current as well as runaway loads. And the input required for this is very crucial because ITER needs to have this before its final design review in 2017. So in this area, there are many gaps in physics spaces, and there's also a lack of fundamental understanding in many areas. So what has happened over the last 2 years since the last FEC in San Diego? So disruption research has increased over these 2 years and become more focused since the last FEC. Basically, there's been work because of joint experiments in prediction and avoidance, both empirical and theory-based. Measurement of halo currents, for example, has been one of the tasks. Exploration of various techniques for disruption avoidance. Similarly, in characterization, things like asymmetric events, what are its causes and consequences, mitigation and control. And in this endeavor, ITP has played a major role in coordinating and contributing towards joint experiments and modeling activities. So let's come to the topic of disruption avoidance and control. So there have been a number of papers in this conference talking about this issue. Here's one example from a work which shows how using advanced feedback control, one can avoid tearing mode locking and disruption by using electromagnetic torques. So this was demonstrated in D3D. As you can see, once you turn off, as long as you have the feedback on, the plasma is behaving properly. As soon as you turn it off here, the mode starts locking and immediately a disruption happens. So this was demonstrated both in D3D as well as in RFX. Similarly, in a K-Star, they did an experiment where they showed that by using external perturbations of n equal to 2, you can delay or actually control the disruption. So the plasma is less susceptible to disruptions and of the n equal to 1 lock mode under a strong n equal to 2 even field. So this was reported. You can see 3 discharges, and as you increase the current in the coil that gives you the n equal to 2 perturbation, you end up with no disruption. There are also a number of smaller machines that tried to advance this concept of how to control disruptions or avoid disruptions. For example, in the compact toroidal hybrid machine, which was run in the tokamak mode, a strong 3D equilibrium shaping applied to the tokamak discharge showed that you could actually delay a disruption event by increasing the amount of shaping that you give it to. Similarly, at IPR in the small Aditya tokamak, a number of experiments were done where disruptions were induced by gas puffing and then by a number of different methods. One is by using biased electrodes, for example, which would control the MHD activities. You could delay the disruption. And similar effects were also observed with the use of ICRF at the edge. But these are results on small machines and need to be validated on larger machines. But the one advantage is that a thing like the ICRF is something that you can use right externally. In JET and COMPASS, a large study was undertaken to investigate this problem of asymmetrical disruptions, and a large number of shots were analyzed, both for the carbon wall shots as well as for the ether-like wall. And this work by Gerasimov et al. Highlights the frequent occurrence of asymmetric disruptions in JET and calculates the magnitude of their consequent sideways forces. So this is very important for ITER and has become an important design input for ITER's mechanical integrity. Similarly, there were experiments on thermal and current quench mitigation. This was done on D3D, where measurements of the radiated power asymmetry during disruption were done. And the radiation asymmetry was attributed to an N equal to 1 MHD event. And this was tested by actually applying an N equal to 1 error field, which seemed to increase the radiation asymmetry. So these results provide a firmer understanding of the 3D physics affecting the ITER disruption mitigation design. Finally, in JET, there are a lot of study on runaway electrons and massive gas injection. So there's a detailed study, which has shown that massive gas injection, which is one of the things that ITER is planning to use for its DMS, its efficiency decreases down to about 75% at high plasma thermal energy content. But the takeaway line from here is that runaway electrons can be stopped if low-Z gas is injected, but before the current quench. So timing is very important. But a very nice experiment, which was actually a joint experiment under the auspices of ITPA, which was presented by Bob Grunitz, showed that the threshold electric field for both the onset and decay of runaway electrons is at least 4 to 5 times above the theoretical value calculated by Conner and Hastie, which only took into account collisional damping or collisional loss of runaways. So which means that there are additional channels of loss of electrons. And the good news is that this suggests that mitigating runaways on ITER may not require fueling to the Rosenbluth limit, but you could do with much less. Finally, there was an experiment on D3D to mitigate runaway electrons using shattered pellet injection. And this is injecting shattered pellets of neon. And again here, the timing is very important. If they are injected early in the current quench phase, then it's very effective in suppressing runaway growth. And the dissipation of this was explained by runaway ion pitch angle scattering, and higher Z was found to be more effective for RE dissipation. So let me now move on to the next topic, which was another major area of investigation at this conference, namely ELMS, characterization, mitigation, and suppression. There is some overlap with the previous talk that Professor Hidalgo gave, because many papers were either in EXT or EXS. So I'll cover some of the highlights of what I found in magnetic confinement stability. So what is the progress since 2012 FEC? Well, first of all, RMPL mitigation and suppression of type 1 ELMS. There's been an expanded operating space because of a large number of experiments, a large number of efforts, and different techniques that have been used. And these have been shown to be robust to loss of coils, which is very reassuring for ITER. Alternate external suppression methods appear quite promising. These include pellet pacing or SMBI gas injection, or even lower hybrid waves. So we now have an improved understanding of ELM dynamics from better diagnostic measurements and, of course, modeling studies. And also some challenges remain. So about expanded operating space, there was a very nice paper by Kirk et al. It showed results from MAST as well as from ASTEX upgrade, which shows that sustained ELM mitigation or ELM suppression has been achieved over a larger parameter space. These are two plots that you can see, and the dashed lines show how this range of ELM suppression or mitigation has been extended over the last 2 years. So this is a plot of density normalized to the green wall density against the collegiality. So ELM size and target heat loads are reduced, but of course there's a price you have to pay. There's a reduction in confinement. And that's again one question that we have to tackle with: how much loss in confinement are we able to accept? There's also been advances in our basic understanding of ELM suppression. And I show you two examples here from D3D. One, of course, is that ELM suppression was achieved with as few as 5 internal coils. As you can see, as you reduce the number of coils from 11 coils to 5 coils, the suppression results are not dramatically changed. So, which is very good for ITER, because if the ITER internal vessel coils are damaged, you would still be able to mitigate or suppress ELMs with them. There's also new data which reveals that there's a bifurcation indicative of resonant field penetration of ELM suppression. That means by varying the alignment of these RMPs, you can show that how the pedestal gets modified and how an island gets excited at the top of the pedestal, which leads to suppression and mitigation of the ELMs. And this seems to agree very well with the EPET theory that you had heard earlier. Now, successful ELM suppression was also used, also demonstrated using very low-end RMPs. And this is a result that came out of K-STAR. And this stands out from the other machines where normally one has to use higher-end RMPs, typically 3 or more. Whereas here, they've shown that even with very low-end, you can get good stabilization. And the other interesting result here was that there was a difference between the confinement properties of mitigated ELMs and suppressed ELMs. And in the same shot, you could also get a regime of suppressed ELM, which seemed to happen after a certain time delay. And this had a better confinement property. And this is something that they have named as a new bursty H-mode state. K-STAR also has very advanced diagnostics in EC imaging, and that gave some interesting results on ELMs. Here is a plot that I've shown, where they were able to make simultaneous measurement of ELMs at both the high and the low yield field sites in K-STAR. And some curious results were that the comparable, that the mode strength on each side was comparable in the high field site as well as the low field site, which is something that is incompatible with the ballooning mode representation of ELMs. So this is something that needs to be understood, that we need to understand. And there also seemed to be an asymmetry in the toroidal and poloidal rotation velocities. So I think this is something that theoreticians will have to work on and see how to reconcile this with the existing theory of peeling ballooning modes. Another remarkable result was ELM mitigation by lower hybrid waves in East. And this was shown over a wide range of Q95. And this was attributed to the formation of helical current filaments in the SOL region. And the ELM frequency was found to increase from 150 Hz to about 1 kHz. And the major attraction of this method is that you do not need any internal vessel coils. If this is successful and can be reproduced in other machines, then that would be a big advantage for ITER. Let me now come to other MHD and 3D physics studies. Basically, over the last 2 years, I think we have gained improved understanding of neoclassical toroidal viscosity in tokamaks, which is a 3D effect. There's also been substantial progress in feedback control of resistive wall modes. This is a subject that has now become quite mature, which allows tokamak operation of Q95 of less than 2. Then the excitation of helical modes, which was observed in K-STAR. Of course, it has been observed in other machines as well, but this was the first tokamak that observed it. And of course, some basic studies in MHD instabilities. So neoclassical toroidal viscosity, as you know, this has been the star topic at the last FEC, a lot of theoretical work as well as experimental work. So now I think we have a much better understanding of this effect, and there have been very careful experiments on NSTX and K-star and validation with theoretical models, which show, give us nice profiles of this viscosity and how the torque is applied because of this viscosity. So the new aspect of this is that you can use now this NTV for rotation control, and this has been incorporated into their controller for NSTX upgrade, which is going to be operational soon. Now D3D and RFX, they achieved reproducible tokamak operation at Q95 less than 2, again thanks to feedback control of the 2-1 resistive wall mode. And this was again using 3D magnetic fields, and this control was over many, many resistive wall times. So this is a result presented by Piero Martin et al., showing results from both D3D as well as RFX mod, where you can see with no feedback, it collapses very soon, but you can sustain it for a very long time with addition of feedback. Active MHD control of RWM was also showed in other machines, notably in a low aspect ratio RFP plasma. And this also showed how using this external MHD control, you could actually get to helical RFP states. And this was identified in this experiment carried out in Japan by Masamune-san et al. Helical modes were also observed for the first time in K-star, when in the sawtoothing K-star plasmas. And these multiple flux tubes, which you could see in the core here, were actually imaged by using their advanced ECE technique. And so these dynamics were actually, you could actually see a movie of this whole thing and how this grows and goes into a steady state with multiple helixes twisted around each other. So this was a very interesting result. Finally, there were a lot of studies on MHD instabilities and their basic properties. And the questions that were really addressed were, what are the various triggering mechanisms and what is the mode dynamics? So one example here is in FDU as well as TCB. So the 2-1 tearing mode was triggered by injection of neon. So neon injection is done for many, many different purposes. But in this case, they also found that you could excite, for example, the 2-1 mode. And you could also excite the 2-1 mode by a central EC power deposition. So as you know, using ECCD and ECH is very important for NTM control. But you also have to know what is the real detailed dynamics of this. So there are instances where you can actually excite the tearing mode by EC power deposition in the center. Similarly, in HL2A, there were a number of studies to see how NTMs get triggered. So they could be triggered by intrinsic error fields, or to be triggered by non-local transport, which I think Carlos also mentioned. And also they studied the interaction with the MHD modes once they are excited. So here is an example of how supersonic molecular beam injection could induce a non-local transport, and this in turn can induce an NTM. Similar effects were also found in LHD, Stellarator, where the effects of low and MHD modes on achievable beta values were found. And they found an interesting new mode, which actually comes about from an excitation of helically trapped ions, which excite this new mode, which is called the energetic ion-driven resistive interchange mode. So which brings me to my next topic, which is energetic particles and waves. As you know, the main issues here is that you need good confinement of energetic particles. This is crucial for alpha heating or burning plasmas. And the instabilities driven by energetic particles can degrade their confinement and also alter their energy distribution. And therefore, they can also impact on things like neutral beam-driven current drive. So the main issues here were how to characterize the stability boundaries and obtain a better understanding of ion transport. So since 2012, if you see, a lot of improved diagnostics and better nonlinear modeling have furthered our understanding on a number of issues. And the experimental database now includes not only tokamaks, but also spherical tokamaks, stellarators, and RFPs, etc. And these provide more accurate correlations between fast ion losses and instabilities. So here are a couple of examples here. For example, in HL2A, they carried out a large number of observations and experiments using a new advanced diagnostics, which was a scintillator-based lost fast ion probe. And using that, they were able to show a number of correlations between the excitation of MHG instabilities and the existence of fast particles. This is an example from the TJ2 stellarator, where it was shown that ECRH has a strong influence on the neutral beam driven alpha modes. And a second EC beam could then be used to actually stabilize the alpha mode. In NSTX as well as in PPL, I mean, they studied this effect of MHG instabilities on the neutral beam current drive. And what they found was that up to 40% of the local current density can be redistributed. And the effects are not correctly accounted for if you use models which just use an ad hoc special diffusion. So they have now developed a more advanced model which can explain some of these results of why the current gets distributed. Fast ion response to externally applied 3D magnetic perturbations was also studied in ASTEC's upgrade as well as D3D. And they showed this very strong correlation between fast ion response in H-mode regime with low collisionality density and low Q95. Similarly, in D3D, this paper by Van Zeeland et al. Showed that pitch angle and energy resolve measurements and wide field of view infrared imaging so that ion losses can be correlated with applied 3D fields in L-mode plasmas and with good agreement with model simulations. Finally, the two tokamaks in Russia, the Tuman 3M and the Bakarev, these are plots of neutron flux versus time. And what they showed basically was how this loss of neutron, loss of ions, energetic ions, can be changed by actually shifting the plasma column inwards. That has a profound effect on the loss mechanism. The next topic is non-inductive current drive, and there are a large number of papers on this. And there were studies of LHD physics, LHCD physics and applications, ICRH optimization in JET, and solenoid free startup for spherical tokamaks. So, as you know, lower hybrid current drive is one of the most reliable current drive mechanisms that we have, and it's been operational for many years. But there are still some basic issues left, and at this conference, there are a number of papers addressing this issue about how the LHCD efficiency or its coupling can degrade at high densities. So there were experiments done in Tor Supra, as well as in Alcator CMOD, and also in EAST. And for example, in Alcator CMOD, they found that this degradation is associated with excitation of parametric decay instabilities. And these are excited near the separatics, and onset can be mitigated by modifying conditions in the scrape off layer. And they go on to suggest that if you launch from the high field side, that'd be more efficient because you could control the nature of the SOL there more precisely. Similarly, what is the effect of this current drive? You could sometimes destabilize things like the internal kink mode by suprathermal electron pressure, which is driven by the lower hybrid current drive. And this was demonstrated in this paper here. And there's a new type of periodic fishbone-like instability was found, which is distinct from the sawtooth instability. And this demonstrates a direct dynamic relation between LHCD-generated fast electrons and a fishbone-like mode. Finally, in JET, there was some work to maximize the ICRF power, and basically by using local gas injection between the antenna and the plasma, you could increase the efficiency of ICRF power coupling. Now, fully non-inductive current drive was also shown using this 28 gigahertz and 8.2 gigahertz in spherical tokamak Quest in Japan, and they obtained very high currents and they could sustain it over much longer time. So this is a very positive development. This was also done on the TST2 spherical tokamak using a whole range of antennas, and here they used lower hybrid frequencies. So finally, I come to my last topic, which is the innovative consignment concepts, and there were about 15 papers here, and dealt with various topics. I mean, things like how to improve tokamak performance using novel magnetic configurations, what were the advances in field reverse configurations, spherical configurations other than tokamaks like spheromaks, and new ideas and concepts for fusion reactors. So I'll touch on a couple of them here. For example, there's a suggestion by Medvedev et al. Of using negative triangularity in a tokamak. As you know, the conventional tokamak has this positive triangularity. But if you reverse this and have a negative triangularity, this has certain advantages in terms of the way you, the diverter heat load is reduced, and you can actually handle heats much more efficiently. So this concept has been around for a while, but there are basic issues with it. I mean, you have to worry about what about the stability of this kind of a configuration. So these are the issues that were addressed this time. And a number of studies were shown about the MHD stability of this configuration and how you can actually get better confinement, and also what are the technical merits of this kind of a configuration. And there's also experiment proposals to try out this kind of a configuration in TCV, which has the facility to do this, and also in HL2M and possibly D3D. So this is something you can look forward to in the future, whether you get good positive results. Similarly, in FRC, which was also presented at the last FEC, since then there has been some good progress. One of the difficulties in an FRC is that it can trigger, a toroidal spin-up in an FRC can trigger the centrifugally driven interchange-like mode, the NEP2. And what these experiments have now shown is that you can suppress this spontaneous rotation by actually injecting plasmoids or magnetized plasmoids from two ends. So you will see how without the injection the spin-up goes up, but here you can see this going down. Finally, there's a spherical configuration, the spheromak. Again, this was something that has been reported at last two or three FECs, but they have made very, very steady progress. So the basic progress has been in the current drive in HITSI. And basically, they've done this by increasing the frequency of the imposed dynamo current drive up to 68.5 kilohertz. So the toroidal currents they've obtained are of 90 kiloamps and current gains of nearly a factor of four, which is a spheromak record. And so that this dynamo current does not need any plasma-generated fluctuations. So this is something that you are imposing from outside. So a stable equilibrium with profile control can be sustained with imposed fluctuations. So when they extrapolate to ITER, say to 80 kilohertz, this gives injector powers of less than 10 megawatts. So with very, very small fluctuation magnetic field, indicating that the effect on confinement may be acceptable. So they've gone on to actually propose a 1 gigawatt reactor called Dynamac, which is which would be far less complex than ITER and maybe at 1/4 the cost of ITER. So let me end now with my concluding remarks. So in the area of tokamak experiment stability and waves and particles, there's been a focused international effort on ITER-relevant issues, and which has considerably advanced our understanding on ELM physics and disruption phenomena. Runaway mitigation system is not yet firmly established, but there are promising leads that need to be followed. Alternate ELM mitigation systems that do not require internal vessel coils show considerable promise and may provide an attractive future option for ITER. New ideas on disruption avoidance and control need validation on larger machines. In ICC, it's heartening to see good scientific progress in alternatives to the tokamak accelerator approach, for example, in spheromaks and FRCs. And exploration and development of such alternate schemes are essential for improving our chances of early fusion power, and we need to promote more such ideas. So finally, I think we'll all agree that it's been a very exciting week. Experienced a wealth of scientific results and also experienced wonderful hospitality. So I would like to end by thanking our hosts and IAEA for a great conference. Thank you.